Hello and welcome to another episode of the Locked On Red Sox podcast. Thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. I am your host, Nessun's Lauren Campbell. I will be joined shortly by Massachusetts Pirates team reporter Jake Iggy, and we have a very, very special episode for you. We were able to speak with former Red Sox player Ryan LaVarnway. We asked him your questions you sent in to us on Twitter. We were able to talk to him about his career, his time with the Red Sox, and so much more. And this is only part one, so we are so excited to share our conversation with you. Let's get right to it.
You are Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are here with former Red Sox player Ryan LaVarnway. So how are we doing today, Ryan?
What's going on, guys?
Really appreciate you taking the time today, man. Got any exciting plans coming up for the holidays?
Nothing for Christmas, really. We'll probably order some Chinese food. I'm hosting a baseball camp Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then Thursday, we're off to Rome for a few nights.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah. Take my wife on a nice little vacation.
That's love it. Awesome. That would be awesome. I first want to start off, you know, talking about you growing up. I think it's pretty cool through my research that your favorite player growing up was Jason Varitek, and that you actually had the opportunity to, you know, play with him a few times while you were on the Red Sox.
Yeah. Well, if we're going to be 100% honest, it was top three players, because I think everyone growing up, the time I grew up, loved Ken Griffey Jr. How could you not? And then everyone also loved Chipper Jones because the Braves played on national television every day. But Varitek was my favorite catcher. The guy's an absolute legend. And I got to play with him, and he couldn't have been more generous, more kind, more willing to share his experience and his knowledge. I have nothing but respect for Tech.
And I'm curious, what was that like first interaction like when you first met him? Was it kind of like starstruck at first sight?
So I actually was just telling the story, and it's to me, I think it's a great story. I was not a great catcher when I got drafted. So I was in minor league spring training. I was not the guy that got brought over to major league games, because at that time the facilities were in different places. I was not the guy that got brought over to games. So it was my third minor league spring training when I first got to go to a major league game. And one of the other catchers in minor league spring training, who went all up to across the street all the time, he said, "Listen, Jason Varitek is so intense. He's probably not going to talk to you. You're probably going to think that he wants to eat your face off, but don't take it personal." So I went over there. I didn't know what to expect. And he just was so generous, like I said, and so kind and so open. Maybe it was because it was the last couple of years of his career that he had kind of mellowed out. I don't know. I don't know what this guy was talking about with the eat your face comment. But then flash forward to the first game that I ever got to catch in the big leagues. It was game 161 of that 2011 season, when it was the kind of the chicken and beer year. And Salty and Tech both got hurt on game 160. So they're like, "Hey, rookie, you're in." And Tech was like, "Hey, do you want my scouting binder? It's in code. It's in chicken scratch. I don't know if you'll be able to read it." And I opened this binder. It's like this thick, because he was the most prepared man on the planet. He had every scouting report on every player. And I opened it, and there's writing all over the page. There's little arrows and abbreviations. And to me, it felt like that moment in A Beautiful Mind when you see like the genius that is and how it comes to be. And I'll never forget his generosity with me.
Wow, that's incredible. That's why he had the C on his chest.
That's right.
He was one of my favorite players growing up as well. And just the way he called games was mastermind, like just absolute genius behind the plate. So you mentioned, you know, Chipper Jones being one of the top three favorite players. The Braves were always on national TV growing up. Were they default by your favorite team, or who was your favorite kind of team growing up?
No, I grew up in LA, so it was the Dodgers for me. And that I grew up at Dodger Stadium, going to those games. The Dodger dogs and the chocolate malt shakes were amazing. But we talked about Chipper Jones, and I ended up playing for the Braves later in my career, and Chipper was always around. And
that's cool.
I got to tell you this story because it's just too good to not tell right now. I was on the Braves. Chipper Jones is in the locker room. He's sitting in the food room at Old Turner Field before they opened up the new place. And Freddie Freeman's like, everyone called me Varney in Pro Bowl. Everyone, so he's like, hey, Varney, you got to go ask Chipper who his favorite player is. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. That sounds like a setup. That sounds like I'm going to be the butt of a joke. He's like, no, go ask Chip who his favorite player is. I'm like, are you sure? He's like, yeah, just go. So Chip's got like, he's got like a half mouthful of food. And so I go, Chip, who's your favorite player? Mouth half full of food, zero hesitation. As he, like a noodle pops out of his mouth, he goes, me, motherfucker. And you better be your favorite player too. And I thought that was just so perfect. And the way he meant it was not egotistical. He meant it as like, I root for myself. Right. I always believe in myself no matter what. But I think that's part of what made him so darn good.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, you got to have that confidence in yourself to be able to make it as and be as good as he was.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Well, you had the opportunity to play at Yale University, and you had some remarkable years at Yale. In 2007, you won the National Collegiate Athletic Association batting title. You hit .467. Then you also set a record as well, which when I was doing my research, I was like, holy crap. Had a 25-game hitting streak, as well as hit set the Ivy League all-time career home run record with 33. So, how fun was it?
Come on.
Oh, it was 34. In 2007, how fun was it playing in that year?
Oh, man. Baseball is so fun when you get a hit every day. I'll tell you what. I was just doing all the little things right. And I want to give so much credit to the hitting coach at Yale at the time, Glenn Lungarini. He is just one of the coaches that I've had along the way that has raised my standard of what I even thought was possible. At the end of my freshman year, I think I had a very average freshman year, maybe hit 300, which in college is nothing special. And they gave out the all Ivy League awards at the end of the season, which I did not earn. I wasn't even really in consideration, but I didn't know they did such a thing. And I mm-hmm. said to Coach Glenn at the time, I said, hey, that's cool. I want to win all Ivy next year. And he looks at me, and I'll never forget this conversation and the look in his face. He said, forget all Ivy League. If you're not an All-American by the time you graduate, I'll be disappointed.
Oh, boy. There you go.
And from me in my 18-year-old brain, not even knowing all Ivy League was a thing that happened, to never even considering in my wildest dreams being an All-American, mm-hmm. it like raised my standard. And that's what I try to do when I coach or when I mentor young players is raise your bar of what you think is possible. Because wouldn't you know it, I took that mentality to summer baseball that year. And every time I took batting practice, I was in my head and it lived in my brain. And then the next season I won the batting title and I was an All-American.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing. In 2007, though, you had a lot of success. You attributed a lot of your success to your coach there. And is this kind of when you realized that you had a chance at playing pro ball? Like did your hitting coach there help really kind of help you get that dream, kind of manifest it, and like you said, raise your standards?
Yeah, so again, I always had the dream to play pro ball, but everyone asks like, when did you know? And I think my sophomore year was when I started to know, and it started to be a real opportunity that I thought would present itself. My high school coach did the same thing. I didn't make the varsity team in high school until my junior year, and I got benched for half of the year. So then in the fall semester of my senior year, coach was walking around. I remember we were stretching before practice. He said, who's going to hit fourth on this team? And I'm thinking to myself, it's not going to be me. I got benched last year. But I jokingly said, why not me? And he looked at me and he said, why not you? And by the time the season came on again, he raised my standard for what I thought was possible. So I think it's so important to really coach kids and inspire them the right way and help them realize that they can be better than they ever think they can. And I try to remember that every time that I'm working with young people.
We hope you are enjoying our conversation with Ryan LaVarnway. We will dive into much more with him in our second segment of Locked On Red Sox. Thank you once again for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. But first, I need to tell you about Built Bar. By now, you probably know it's not an episode of Locked On Red Sox if I am not talking to you about Built Bar. It's the holiday season, so grab the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, or even better than a candy bar. Built Bar is filled with so much holiday goodness, rich with decadent flavor. It's covered in chocolate. You honestly get the best of both worlds with it being delicious and healthy. There's also so many flavors, you'll have a hard time choosing. There's raspberry, there's mint brownie, there's cherry, there's double chocolate. There's also my personal favorite, cookies and cream. Built Bar gives you that extra fuel you need to bust down those mall doors and battle those holiday shoppers. If you're like me, you are finishing your Christmas shopping today, so make sure to grab a Built Bar. That's exactly what I'm going to do. And because it's the season of peace and love, do not bring up your favorite Built Bar flavor at family parties. People are so passionate about their favorite flavor, they'll fight you for it. But what's a holiday family gathering without a little drama, right? And if you're friends with Santa, tell him to throw a few Built Bars in those stockings. With so many flavors, they'll make anyone's Christmas morning a happy one. And we have an offer for you. Go to built.com, use promo code LOCKED15 and get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com.
Oh, 1000%. I think that's huge. I've tried to, you know, shift how I say things. Like, I hope something happens. Now I shift it to know it will. And if you have that belief, like, it just gives you so much more confidence in everything that you do.
Absolutely.
We actually had one of the fans ask you, since you went to Yale, Big Sox Guy on Twitter, he said, what's your favorite pizza in New Haven? I don't know if you've watched The One Bite with Dave Portnoy, but he's marked New Haven, Connecticut as the pizza capital of America.
Oh, yeah. Pizza is one thing. Everyone always goes Pepe's or Sally's. I think bar pizza was really good. But there was other foods that were so good in New Haven. Louis Lunch, if you're into the original hamburger sandwich. And then Alpha Delta Pizza, it wasn't the pizza there, but there was a buffalo chicken grinder that they named after a student, the Wenzel, that lives in my heart and in my memory.
I love it. That's hysterical.
It's always a good time for pizza, especially in New Haven, really in New England. It just pizza anywhere you go is always good pizza. Fast forwarding now to you being drafted by the Red Sox in 2008 in the sixth round. Was it difficult for you to make the decision to leave college since you were pretty close to graduating at that time?
No, I was at that point. So I had surgery a couple of weeks before the draft because I tried to dive over the catcher's head against Harvard because I'm too competitive and wouldn't just let him tag me out. But I remember feeling at the time like I had accomplished pretty much what there was to accomplish in college baseball in the Ivy Leagues. So I was ready to take the next challenge and pursue the next opportunity.
That makes sense. And yeah, because we usually hear a lot of people, very similar answer, but I thought it was interesting how like you mentioned, you got injured and you were projected much higher than you were. Obviously, you went the sixth round and were able to eventually play professional baseball. But it was also interesting as well, you know, reading about after your first season with the Lowell Spinners, how you had so much success in the Greenville Drive using a bigger bat. I thought that was sort of interesting. So talk about how that bigger bat sort of made a little bit of a difference.
That's a deep dive. I'm impressed with your research.
Tried.
Yeah, I was always a small bat guy. Bat speed, bat control, barrel control was always really important to me. I used a 33-inch bat in my sophomore year in college when I, you know, led the country and everything. And my junior year, I started picking up a bigger bat. And my assistant coach at the time said, "Hey, you can do whatever you want, but just so you know, I'll probably get fired if I let you use a different bat and you suck." So I think I ended up going back to the smaller bat, and I had, you know, equal success before I got hurt that season. And I continued with the same size bat into pro ball. And then when I got to the Greenville Drive, the hitting coach was like, you have to use a bigger bat. I won't even let you. You're a giant. You look like you're swinging a toothpick. So I went to the bigger bat, and once I kind of figured out where the barrel was on that sucker, I kind of took off there.
Yeah, and you did. I want to mention for the fans, I mean, after that bigger bat, you think my research was good. He hit 21 home runs, which is a team all-time record. You also posted a 540 slugging percentage, which in both categories, you led all Red Sox minor leaguers during that season.
It was a good year. I think I broke the Greenville Drive homers record and tied the doubles record. And the only reason I know that is because the last week of the season, I was tied for both of them. And my manager, Kevin Bowles, said, I got permission for you to swing 3-0 so that you can go for the record. So if you get to 3-0, I'm not going to take the bat out of your hands. Go for it. And I had never swung 3-0 in my entire life. And I think I totally swung at a ball and blew it and whatever else. But one of those records was just broken by a kid this year, I think. So good for him.
Not really. Well, La Russa, I don't think would have liked you swinging 3-0. I know that for sure.
No, they shouldn't have let me. He probably would have thrown a strike. It would have been better off 3-1.
That's hilarious. I love it.
In 2010, you were named the Red Sox co-minor league offensive player of the year alongside Anthony Rizzo. And when you look back, how does that feel for you to be recognized with someone who's one of the best hitters in baseball?
More so than Anthony Rizzo being a great hitter, can we talk about what a tremendous human being he is and 100%. What he overcame cancer-wise to now think of it as an afterthought, but also give back to the community and give back to children. I've kind of lost touch with him over the years, but every time I do see him, it's always a great reunion. And more than the player, I'm just happy to be affiliated with him in any way as a person.
Makes sense. I completely agree. The guy, what he, like you said, what he's done now for the community is incredible. And I think it's also kind of cool as well how much personality he has as well.
He loves playing the game. He's such a kid in a big man's body, and I love watching him. Just love that guy.
Yeah, I got to be honest, I hated seeing him in a Yankees uniform this past season. Wished he was in Boston, but you know, it is what it is.
He looks good in pinstripes, though.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, also after that season, you were named AFL Rising Star, and in 2011, you were Baseball America's best power prospect in the International League. And I'm always curious from guys hearing their take on, especially looking back, what that pressure was like when they first sort of found out that they were a quote-unquote top prospect.
For me, I didn't feel any pressure, actually. Mostly because 10 years ago, being a prospect did not mean what it means today, especially with a big market team like Boston. When I got called up to the big leagues finally, they had more than 10 players with more than 10-year service time. So being some sort of hotshot prospect, again, who are you going to play over, David Ortiz or Jason Baratek? It doesn't matter what kind of prospect you are. Now being a prospect holds a lot of weight, and it gives you trade value and it gives you organizational value. And they'll trade franchise players away to make space for you. But it was a different world in 2011, and especially with the Red Sox team that was trying to win and win right now. So pressure, didn't feel it at that point.
Makes sense.
Yeah, you're a better person than me. I feel pressure over the slightest things every single day. So good for you. And you mentioned getting called up by the Red Sox there. Can you kind of take us through that day, that phone call, getting to Fenway, and just getting to be around the Red Sox and what that whole process was like?
Yeah, so my call-up involved, I was watching the Red Sox had a day game at Fenway, and I was in Pawtucket. We had a night game. So we were watching the big league game on TV, and David Ortiz got pulled out of the game. And I think I was on a hot streak. I had hit like 9 homers in 10 games. And my teammates were like, what do you got to do to get called up? And I was like, doesn't matter. Jason Baratek's ahead of me. It doesn't matter what I do. But David Ortiz came out of the game, and right as I was thinking, man, that would be cool, I got a tap on the shoulder, said, hey, the manager wants to see you. So I went in. It was Arnie Baylor at the time. and he says, hey, you're going to fly to Kansas City tomorrow to meet the team. Don't tell anyone, because David Ortiz and Kevin Euclid, they're both banged up. They're going to see the doctor in the morning. If they're both okay, then you're coming right back and you're not going to be activated. But if one of them is hurt, you're starting in the starting lineup. So of course I told everyone I know, and I flew to Kansas City the next day, and on the plane, I watched, my computer was this big, you know, the big clunkers that happened 10 years ago. I watched the DVD version of the movie For Love of the Game and cried like a baby, because I was so excited and I was so unsure about what was going to happen. And when I landed, I called from the baggage claim and they said, you're in the starting lineup, get to the stadium as fast as you can. So
wow,
the rest is history.
And you honestly made history during that debut. It's pretty incredible. You hit your first two major league home runs, and you became the third player ever to hit two home runs in your first start as a catcher. Did you not?
So it wasn't. So my first call up, I played DH for Ortiz. That was in August, I think. And then I got sent back down, and I got called back up. And then I didn't start at catcher until game 161. And that's when I had that game that you're talking about, which was a pretty cool memory, and I'm glad we won the game. But no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious, especially I'm always wondering what guys think, especially after they hit that first home run, because you know they work so hard to get up to the majors, and to be able to hit that first one, it can't always be easy.
So. What I look back and remember about that first home run is they show the hitter, they track the ball, and then they go back to the hitter running around the bases. And I look back at 24-year-old Ryan trying so hard to be Jason Varitek that I didn't even let myself smile because of, you know, the Jason Varitek, he's intense, he's gonna eat your face off. I was trying to emulate him and be this stoic, grown up, like this is business as usual. But on the inside, I'm like freaking out, right? Like, this is awesome. Right. So now 34-year-old Ryan, now, you know, when I hit a homer, I got the biggest smile on my face. I enjoy the moment because I'm not Jason Varitek. You know, you got to be the best version of you. And Ryan now as a leader is a different type of leader as Jason was. And I don't have a C on my chest, but I try to be a leader, and I try to lead by example in my own personal way. So that's what I look back on now.
I bet after that second one, you were like, damn, this feels good.
Yeah, the second one went a little farther.
We have so much more to get to with Ryan LaVarnway in our third segment of Locked On Red Sox. As always, thank you for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. Before we get into our third and final segment, I need to tell you about Bet Online, because Bet Online has you covered this holiday season, which means there's more props, odds, and lines than ever before, especially as football continues its march through the college bowls this season and into the pro football playoffs. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all of the sports action this season. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive that 50% welcome bonus. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, UFC, right down to your favorite Vegas casino games, do not wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and the easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. And as someone who is a brand new bettor, I can very much confirm that BetOnline makes it super, super easy. It's BetOnline where the game starts.
You talk so highly of Jason Varitek and how you try to, you know, emulate your game after him, trying to kind of just be how he was in the clubhouse. Did he take you under his wing at all, or was there anyone in the Red Sox organization when you were called up kind of did that?
Not so much. So that first year that I was a rookie, I was up for maybe 34 days, and Jason was there. But then he retired and he wasn't around the next year. So I wish I would have got to spend more time with him because I have so much respect for him, but I unfortunately did not get to play with my mentor for an extended period.
Makes sense. And like you mentioned, I mean, you were only there for, like you said, 30 some odd days in 2011, but that was a pretty horrendous collapse that the Red Sox had at the end of that season. And so, like, especially somebody coming up from Pawtucket, what was your experience like sort of being around that team as the whole September collapse happened?
Yeah, so I got called up the first time for 8 days in August, and we showed up to the yard every day, and we knew we were going to kick your ass, and you knew we were going to kick your ass, and it was beautiful. And then I got sent down for the mandatory 10 days that you need to be down for an option, and I came back up, and it was just a different feeling. I got called up maybe September 8th, and I was riding the bench. I wasn't playing much, but watching and observing how, you know, the media pressure and what the front office was trying to do about it, and guys were battling injuries. I don't know that the chicken and beer that it was blamed on was necessarily a fair scapegoat. But it was definitely a different world than when I had gotten called up in August.
Yeah, I just got a massive flashback. I guess I can call it a nightmare when Carl Crawford missed that diving catch and the Baltimore Orioles when they had nothing to really win for. And then I also thought of the Evan Longoria where he throws his hands up with the walk-off in the Rays ultimately.
Yeah, and the rain delay for us that we were up, and then we lost the momentum from the rain delay. And yeah, wasn't the best finish to that season.
Well, so after that game, like what was the feeling? Like, obviously nobody was happy in the clubhouse, but especially as somebody who you know came up at the end, how was that sort of experience after that tough loss?
I think it's as you would expect. We could move on to something more positive if you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that season is, you know, my grandma still complains about it and she can't move on. I don't know how any of us will, but in 2012, you played under Bobby Valentine, and just kind of what was it like playing under someone like Bobby Valentine, who had so much experience? So many people knew him from like getting ejected from the Mets game and coming back with like the mustache on and just kind of sitting in the dugout. So just kind of like, what was it like playing under somebody like Bobby Valentine?
It was definitely very different than the Terry Francona approach. And now that I've played parts of 10 seasons in the big leagues for 8 different teams, I think I've played for 10 different major league managers. And I would say Terry Francona is one of my favorite. I would say Buck Showalter is one of my favorite. Bobby Valentine, I don't know that I would list as high. But everyone has their own unique style, and I think people relate to their managers and managers relate to players differently.
I actually heard a little interesting tidbit. I figured I would mention this. I was curious on what your reaction was, but he actually brought you up in the most recent Section 10 interview that came out this past week. Unfortunately, it's not like a compliment, but he called you the slowest runner he's ever managed.
Oh, that's fair.
I heard that. I'm like, where did that come from? Out of nowhere. And Jared Carrabas, he goes, Ryan LaVarnway was always one of the nicest guys in the clubhouse. He's like, but I haven't thought about him in a minute.
Yeah, no, I am probably the slowest guy that he's ever coached, and that's fair. Which just means that all my offensive stats are that much more impressive, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
100%.
I'm not getting any cheap hits.
Exactly.
So in 2012, you and Craig Breslow became the first Yale players to be MLB teammates since 1949, and it's also the first all-Yale bat in the major league since 1883. That's a long, long time. So just kind of like, what was that like to kind of come together with him? And I guess, I mean, over 100 years, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to just gush about everyone we talk about, but Craig Breslow, talk about if there ever has been anyone that took me under their wing and acted as a mentor to me, it was Craig, because of the Yale connection and because he was, you know, 8 years ahead of me in his career. He's always been like a big brother within the baseball game for me. I think both of us kind of roll our eyes when people quote that stat, because where we went to college is not who we identify. We were just major league players, teammates, and going about our business. But it is fun to think that, you know, we have that shared history, and hopefully it won't be another 100 years until more Yale teammates get to do that.
Yeah, I hope not.
We hope you enjoyed part one of our conversation with former Red Sox player Ryan LaVarnway. Part two will drop Friday morning. So we are super excited for to share that with you. Thank you so much once again for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Locked On Red Sox right here on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find Locked On Red Sox. Be sure to check out all of the other Locked On shows across our network, Locked On A's, Locked On Yankees, Locked On Giants. They all do an incredible job. Be sure to find me on Twitter at LaLaLaLauren. That's three laws, Lauren of four R's. You can find Jake Iggy on Twitter at Jake Iggy and the Red Sox, the Locked On Red Sox Twitter account at LO_Red Sox. And now that you have made Locked On Red Sox your first listen of today, head on over to Locked On Bets to make that your second listen. Locked On Bets is your one-stop shop for all of your betting needs. It's hosted by your boy Q with expert insight and analysis from Lee Sterling. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day. We'll see you Friday.